My name's Michael. I'm 33, and I've recently learned one of life's harshest lessons. Being married to someone who sees you as a paycheck and little else is a fast track to misery. Let me take you back to the good times, or at least what I thought were the good times. When I met Ashley, she was like a firecracker, full of energy, laughter, and just the right amount of crazy to make life interesting. We couldn't keep our hands off each other. Every glance, every touch, it was electric. But here's the kicker. Marriage is apparently the kryptonite to passion. Fast forward 4 years into wedded bliss, or should I say, wedded boredom. One day, after what felt like the 100th, not tonight, I'm tired, I decided to bring it up. Big mistake. Michael, she said, with the calmness of a kindergarten teacher explaining why you don't eat glue, I don't owe you anything in the bedroom. I blinked. You're kidding, right? No. I'm your wife, not your object. Her tone was so self-assured, you'd think she'd just solved world hunger. Meanwhile, I was sitting there, stunned, wondering how the hell we got here. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not some caveman demanding sex on a schedule. But when your wife flat out tells you that physical intimacy is off the table indefinitely, you start to wonder if maybe you're living with a really expensive roommate. I tried to reason with her. Ash, this isn't just about sex. It's about connection, closeness, us. She sighed like I'd just asked her to solve a calculus problem. Michael, we're fine. Stop overthinking everything. Spoiler alert, we were not fine. Over the next few months, I tried everything. Date nights, cooking dinner, even folding the damn laundry, despite hating it with the passion of a thousand suns. Every time she'd thank me with a quick peck on the cheek, like I was her overly helpful co-worker. One night, I brought up the idea of therapy. Maybe a counselor could help us work through this. Her response? A sharp laugh. Michael, therapy isn't going to make me want you more. Ouch. That one stung. But hey, I'm nothing if not persistent. So I booked a session anyway, hoping she'd change her mind. She didn't. Instead, she rolled her eyes and said, "Why can't you just accept that this is how I am now? Marriage isn't all about sex, you know." It was at that moment I realized Ashley wasn't going to change. And honestly, maybe I shouldn't have to beg my own wife to care. After that conversation, something shifted in me. It was like a switch flipped, and I realized I was done begging. I mean, who wants to feel like a salesman trying to pitch intimacy to their own spouse? No thanks. I decided to focus on me for a while. Gym sessions, hanging out with friends, even picking up an old hobby. Woodworking, if you're curious. But as the months passed, Ashley's indifference started to feel like a giant neon sign flashing, "You're the problem." I wasn't sure if I was crazy, or if she really just didn't give a damn anymore. Then came the kicker. One day, out of nowhere, Ashley waltzes into the living room with a smile that could light up Times Square. "So," she begins, sitting down like she's about to pitch me a business proposal, "I've been thinking. Maybe we should start trying for kids." I almost choked on my coffee. "Kids? Are you serious?" "Yes, Michael. We're not getting any younger, and it's the next logical step." "Logical step?" I stared at her, trying to figure out if she was joking. "Ashley, we've had sex twice this year. Twice. You really think now's the time to have a baby?" Her smile faltered, but she quickly recovered. "Well, maybe that's something we can work on." Oh, now she wanted to work on it? How convenient. I could feel my blood pressure rising, so I did what any reasonable husband would do. I left the room before I said something I'd regret. That night, lying in bed, I stared at the ceiling and thought about what she'd said. Kids weren't just a logical step. They were a lifetime commitment. And the idea of raising a child in a marriage where one partner was checked out wasn't just depressing, it was terrifying. The next morning, I called a lawyer. By the end of the week, I had divorce papers drafted and ready to go. I wasn't playing games anymore. On Monday, I handed them to her. "Michael, what the hell is this?" she asked, holding the papers like they were radioactive. "It's a divorce petition," I said flatly. "I've thought about this long and hard, and I think it's the best thing for both of us." She blinked, clearly not expecting me to actually follow through. You're serious? Dead serious. For the first time in what felt like years, Ashley didn't have a snappy comeback. Instead, she just sat there staring at the papers in silence. Over the next few days, Ashley went from shocked to full-blown hysterical. There were tears, arguments, and the occasional guilt trip. "I thought you loved me," she said at one point, her voice cracking. "I do love you," I replied. "But love isn't enough if there's no effort from both sides." I started packing my things, determined to leave the house as soon as possible. That's when the real Ashley emerged. One evening, as I was boxing up my books, she walked into the room wearing lingerie I'd never seen before. And let me tell you, it wasn't just any lingerie. It was the kind that belongs in a Victoria's Secret runway show. She even had props. Props. "Michael," she purred, leaning against the doorframe. "Maybe we could give this another shot." I'll admit, I hesitated. For a brief, fleeting moment, I thought, maybe she's serious this time. Maybe she's finally realized what she's losing. But then reality smacked me in the face. Where had all this effort been for the last 2 years? And more importantly, why did it take divorce papers to get her to care? "Sorry, Ashley," I said, stepping past her. "You're a little late." Her jaw dropped. "You're really going to throw this all away?" "No," I said, turning to face her. "You already did." After that night, Ashley pulled out all the stops. First, it was the lingerie. Then came the emotional pleas. And finally, my personal favorite, the guilt trips. "You're abandoning me," she sobbed one morning as I packed the last of my clothes. "I gave you the best years of my life, Michael." I zipped my duffel bag and looked her dead in the eye. "Ashley, you gave me exactly what you thought was enough to keep me around. Let's not rewrite history." Her tears stopped instantly, and her expression hardened. "Fine, leave. You'll regret this." Ah, there it was. The classic, "you'll never do better than me" speech. I shrugged, slung the bag over my shoulder, and walked out. For once, I didn't look back. Before you find out what happens next, please subscribe to the channel. I spent the first few nights in a hotel, which wasn't ideal, but it gave me the space I desperately needed. I changed all my passwords, sorted through our joint accounts, and made sure Ashley wouldn't have access to anything she wasn't entitled to. The lawyer had been clear: keep things clean, keep things fair, but most importantly, keep things smart. A few days later, my sister called. "Come stay with me," she said. "I've got plenty of room, and honestly, it'll be good for you to be around family." By the weekend, I was back in my hometown, crashing at her place while I figured out my next steps. It felt surreal. The house we shared, the life we built, it was all behind me now. But of course, Ashley wasn't done. Not by a long shot. The texts started first. "I miss you. Can we talk? I know I messed up. Please, just give me one more chance. This isn't who we are, Michael." I didn't respond. My lawyer had advised me to limit communication, and honestly, I didn't want to get sucked back into her web. But then came the voicemails. "Michael, please, I'll do whatever it takes to make this right. Just come home." Home? That house hadn't felt like home in years. About a week later, Ashley's attempts to fix things hit a new low. My sister and I were sitting in the living room, catching up, when my phone buzzed. It was a picture from Ashley. I hesitated before opening it, and when I finally did, I almost dropped the phone. It was her, dressed in more lingerie, holding a bottle of champagne, with a caption that read, "Let's celebrate a fresh start." My sister glanced at the screen and burst out laughing. "Wow, she's really pulling out all the stops, huh?" "Yeah," I muttered, deleting the photo. "She's nothing if not persistent." By the end of the month, I had my own place, a small apartment with just enough room for me and my thoughts. It wasn't much, but it was mine. I started focusing on work, reconnecting with old friends, and figuring out who I was outside of that marriage. One night, while scrolling through social media, I noticed Ashley had posted a picture. She was out with some friends, smiling like nothing had happened. The caption read, "Here's to new chapters." I couldn't help but laugh. For someone who'd claimed she couldn't live without me, she sure looked fine. But then again, appearances had always been Ashley's specialty. I'm not saying everything was perfect. There were days I felt lonely, nights I second-guessed my decision, and moments when I wondered if I'd ever find someone who truly got me. But as time went on, those feelings faded, replaced by a sense of peace I hadn't felt in years. For the first time in a long time, I wasn't living in someone else's shadow. I was living for me. The divorce went surprisingly smoothly. I mean, don't get me wrong, it wasn't fun. Lawyers, paperwork, and awkward meetings with Ashley where she tried her best to look like the wrong party. It was all exhausting. But in the end, we kept things civil. The house? She wanted to keep it. Honestly, I didn't care. That place had too many memories I was ready to leave behind. The agreement was simple. She'd pay me half of its value over the next 5 years. My lawyer made sure the terms were airtight. No late payments, no excuses. Ashley tried to argue, but I wasn't budging. Everything else, bank accounts, furniture, was split right down the middle, fair and square. I walked away feeling lighter, like I'd just dropped a 100-pound weight I didn't even realize I was carrying. About 2 months after the divorce was finalized, I was finally settling into my new life. Then came the phone call from my old friend Jake. Jake and I had been close for years, and while he wasn't one to gossip, this time he couldn't resist. "Dude, you'll never guess who Ashley's dating now," he said, his voice barely containing the laughter. I sighed. "Do I even want to know?" "Oh, trust me, you do. This guy, he's something." Something turned out to be a guy named Trevor. I did a quick social media search and found Ashley's latest post. The two of them posing in front of her house, all smiles. He was wearing a tank top that said "Hustle Hard," and his arm tattoos looked like they'd been drawn by a bored middle schooler. I couldn't help myself. I laughed, out loud, alone in my apartment. Later that week, Jake filled me in on the details. Apparently, Trevor was a serial entrepreneur. Translation: he sold knockoff energy drinks out of his car and claimed to be an influencer with a grand total of 512 followers. He'd also been married twice and had a reputation for bouncing from one girlfriend's couch to the next. "He's living with her now," Jake added. "Guess he doesn't have his own place." Classic. At first, I thought I'd feel some kind of bitterness or jealousy. But honestly, all I felt was relief. If Trevor was Ashley's idea of an upgrade, then I'd definitely dodged a bullet. Still, I couldn't help but wonder how long it would take for her to realize she'd traded stability for, well, whatever Trevor was offering. Not my problem anymore, though. After the whirlwind of the divorce and the ridiculousness of finding out about Trevor, I decided I needed a break. Not just from work or unpacking my new apartment, but from everything. A night to just relax, enjoy myself, and maybe, if the universe was feeling generous, meet some normal people for a change. That's how I ended up at a small craft beer bar downtown. The place was buzzing with energy, but not too packed, just the right vibe. Rows of taps lined the wall, each labeled with quirky names like Apocalypse and Pineapple Express IPA. I grabbed a spot at the bar, ordered a flight of the most interesting-looking beers, and let myself exhale for what felt like the first time in months. I was halfway through a delicious chocolate stout when she walked in. Short, auburn hair, an easy smile, and a leather jacket that screamed, "I'm cooler than you, but I won't rub it in." She slid onto the stool next to me, glanced at my flight, and smirked. "Trying to drink the whole menu?" she teased. I laughed. "Just narrowing down my favorites. Any recommendations?" She grinned. "Depends. Are you a hops guy or a hide-the-alcohol-with-fruit guy?" "I'd like to think I'm versatile." That got a laugh. "All right, try the mango saison. Trust me." Her name was Samantha, but she insisted on Sam. We spent the next hour talking about everything from beer to travel to the strange phenomenon of people who put pineapple on pizza. She was firmly anti-pineapple. I was Switzerland. She had this energy about her, light, confident, but not overwhelming. It was refreshing after the constant emotional tug of war with Ashley. When the bartender came by to take last call, I realized I didn't want the conversation to end. "Listen," I said, summoning a confidence I didn't quite feel. "This has been a lot of fun. Would you be up for dinner sometime? My treat." She smiled. "Bold move, asking me out while I'm half a beer ahead of you. But yeah, I'd like that." We exchanged numbers, and for the first time in what felt like forever, I walked out of a bar with a genuine smile on my face. A few days later, Sam and I met at a cozy Italian restaurant. Over plates of pasta and glasses of wine, we talked about everything. Her job in graphic design, my foray into woodworking, and even the time she accidentally adopted a ferret. Long story, but hilarious. Eventually, the conversation turned to relationships. It was bound to happen. "So," she said, swirling her wine, "what's your story? Any crazy exes?" I chuckled. "You have no idea." I gave her the short version. Married young, things fell apart, and now I was figuring out life again. She listened intently, her eyes never leaving mine. "What about her?" she asked. "What's she like?" "Oh, you'll love this," I said, pulling out my phone. I scrolled to the photo of Ashley and Trevor in front of the house and handed it to her. "That's her and her new, whatever he is." Found her replacement pretty quick. Sam's eyes widened as she stared at the photo. Then, to my surprise, she let out a laugh, short, sharp, and filled with something I couldn't quite place. "Wait a second," she said, handing the phone back. "I know this guy." My eyebrows shot up. "You do?" "Yeah," she said, leaning back in her chair. "Trevor, he used to hang out with some friends of mine. Total mooch. But here's the kicker. I've seen him and your ex together before, like months ago." I froze. "What do you mean, months ago?" "I mean," she said, lowering her voice, "I saw them together at a party, holding hands. This was way before you said your divorce even started." For a moment, I couldn't speak. My brain was racing, connecting dots I didn't even know were there. If Sam was right, and I had no reason to doubt her, it meant Ashley and Trevor hadn't just been a post-divorce rebound. They'd been seeing each other while we were still married. Sam must have seen the look on my face because she reached across the table and touched my hand. "Hey, you okay?" "Yeah," I said slowly. "Just processing." She smiled sympathetically. "For what it's worth, you're way better off. Trevor's the type of guy who'll drain her dry and then move on to the next sucker." That brought a smirk to my face. "Good to know." We finished dinner, and when we parted ways, she gave me a hug and said, "Don't let this drag you down. You've got better things ahead." Sitting on my couch, I found myself staring out the window at the quiet city skyline. It had been weeks since the dinner with Samantha, and while things were looking up, my mind occasionally drifted back to Ashley. Not out of longing or regret, but curiosity, trying to piece together what went wrong and when. I'd been replaying moments in my head, little things that hadn't stood out at the time but now felt glaringly obvious. The late nights she claimed were work events, the sudden uptick in her gym sessions when she barely cared about fitness before, the way she guarded her phone like it was the nuclear launch codes, and of course, her complete disinterest in me. At first, I'd blamed myself. Maybe I wasn't exciting enough, successful enough, or attentive enough. But then came the big realization. It wasn't me. It was never me. It all started to click after what Samantha said about Trevor. If Ashley had been seeing him for months before the divorce, who's to say he was the first? The dots connected in a way that made my stomach churn. Her sudden refusal of intimacy, her emotional distance. It wasn't just because she'd lost interest in me. It was because she'd likely found someone else. Maybe even more than one someone else. And the part that stung the most? She'd let me sit there, blaming myself, trying to fix a marriage she had probably checked out of long before I realized it. But then, as the weight of that thought settled, I felt something surprising. Relief. Pure, unfiltered relief. Ashley's choices weren't a reflection of my worth or my effort. They were a reflection of her. Her selfishness, her inability to communicate, her need to fill whatever void she had by seeking validation elsewhere. I had spent so much time wondering what I did wrong when the truth was, I wasn't the problem. And now? Now she was Trevor's problem. I laughed softly at the thought. Good luck to her. Something told me she'd need it. As for me, life felt lighter. Samantha and I had been seeing each other more often, and every time I was with her, I felt this spark. Something I hadn't felt in years. She was kind, funny, and completely upfront about who she was. There were no games, no mind reading required. Conversations with her felt effortless, like catching up with an old friend while simultaneously discovering someone new. Sure, it was early days, and I wasn't rushing into anything, but for the first time in a long time, I was excited about the possibility of something real, something that didn't require begging or bending over backward just to feel seen. If you enjoyed the story, please subscribe to the channel. I wish you a great mood and good luck.